Chapter 26. When Mr. Sapsia has nothing better to do, towards evening, and finds the contemplation of his own profundity becoming a little monotonous in spite of the vastness of the subject, he often takes an airing in the cathedral close and thereabout. He likes to pass the churchyard with a swelling air of proprietorship, and to encourage in his breast a sort of benignant landlord feeling, in that he has been bountiful towards that meritorious tenant, Mrs. Sapsia, and has publicly given her a prize. He likes to see a stray face, or two looking in through the railings, and perhaps reading his inscription. Should he meet a stranger coming from the churchyard with a quick step, he is morally convinced that the stranger is with a blush retiring, apostrophe as monumentally directed. Mr. Sapsia's importance has received enhancement, for he has become mayor of Cloisterham. Without mayors, and many of them, it cannot be disputed that the whole framework of society Mr. Sapsia is confident that he invented that forcible figure would fall to pieces. Mayors have been knighted for going up with addresses. Explosive machines intrepidly discharging shot and shell into the English grammar. Mr. Sapsia may go up with an address. Rise, Sir Thomas Sapsia. Of such is the salt of the earth. Mr. Sapsia has improved the acquaintance of Mr. Jasper since their first meeting to partake of port, epitaph, backgammon, beef, and salad. Mr. Sapsia has been received at the gatehouse with kindred hospitality, and on that occasion Mr. Jasper seated himself at the piano and sang to him, tickling his ears figuratively long enough to present a considerable area for tickling. What Mr. Sapsia likes in that young man is that he is always ready to profit by the wisdom of his elders, and that he is sound, sir, at the core. In proof of which, he sang to Mr. Sapsia that evening, no kickshaw ditties, favorites with national enemies, but gave him the genuine George III home brewed, exhorting him, as my brave boys, to reduce to a smashed condition all other islands but this island, and all continents, peninsulas, isthmuses, promontories, and other geographical forms of land soever, besides sweeping the seas in all directions. In short, he rendered it pretty clear that Providence made a distinct mistake in originating so small a nation of hearts of oak, and so many other verminous peoples. Mr. Sapsia, walking slowly this moist evening near the churchyard with his hands behind him, on the lookout for a blushing and retiring stranger, turns a corner, and comes instead into the goodly presence of the dean, conversing with the verger and Mr. Jasper. Mr. Sapsia makes his obeisance, and is instantly stricken far more ecclesiastical than any Archbishop of York or Canterbury. You are evidently going to write a book about us, Mr. Jasper, apostrophe quoth the dean, to write a book about us. Well, we are very ancient, and we ought to make a good book. We are not so richly endowed in possessions as in age, but perhaps you will put that in your book, among other things, and call attention to our wrongs. Apostrophe, Mr. Tope, as in duty bound, is greatly entertained by this. I really have no intention at all, sir, apostrophe replies Jasper, of turning author or archaeologist. It is but a whim of mine. And even for my whim, Mr. Sapsia here is more accountable than I am. Apostrophe, how so, Mr. Mayor? Apostrophe, says the dean, with a nod of good-natured recognition of his fetch. How is that, Mr. Mayor? Apostrophe, I am not aware, apostrophe Mr. Sapsia remarks, looking about him for information, to what the very reverend the dean does me the honor of referring. Apostrophe and then falls to studying his original in minute points of detail. Dirtles, apostrophe Mr. Tope hints. A. Apostrophe the dean echoes. Dirtles. Apostrophe, the truth is, sir, apostrophe explains Jasper, that my curiosity in the man was first really stimulated by Mr. Sapsia. Mr. Sapsia's knowledge of mankind and power of drawing out whatever is recluse or odd around him, first led to my bestowing a second thought upon the man. though of course I had met him constantly about. You would not be surprised by this, Mr. Dean, if you had seen Mr. Sapsia deal with him in his own parlor, as I did. Apostrophe, oh. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cries Sapsia, picking up the ball thrown to him with ineffable complacency and pomposity. Yes, yes. The very Reverend the Dean refers to that? Yes. I happen to bring Durdles and Mr. Jasper together. I regard Durdles as a character. Apostrophe, a character, Mr. Sapsia, that with a few skillful touches you turn inside out, apostrophe, says Jasper. Nay, not quite that, apostrophe, returns the lumbering auctioneer. I may have a little influence over him, perhaps, and a little insight into his character, perhaps. The very Reverend the Dean will please to bear in mind that I have seen the world. Apostrophe, here Mr. Sapsia gets a little behind the Dean to inspect his coat buttons. Well, apostrophe, apostrophe, says the Dean, looking about him to see what has become of his copyist. I hope, Mr. Mayor, you will use your study and knowledge of Durdles to the good purpose of exhorting him not to break our worthy and respected choir master's neck. We cannot afford it. His head and voice are much too valuable to us. Apostrophe, Mr. Tope is again highly entertained, and, having fallen into respectful convulsions of laughter, subsides into a deferential murmur, importing that surely any gentleman would deem it a pleasure and an honor to have his neck broken in return for such a compliment from such a source. I will take it upon myself, sir, apostrophe, observes Sapsia loftily, to answer for Mr. Jasper's neck. I will tell Durdles to be careful of it. He will mind what I say. How is it at present endangered? Apostrophe, he inquires, looking about him with magnificent patronage. Only by my making a moonlight expedition with Durdles among the tombs, vaults, towers, and ruins, apostrophe, returns Jasper. You remember suggesting, when you brought us together, that, as a lover of the picturesque, it might be worth my while? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I remember. Apostrophe, apostrophe, replies the auctioneer. And the solemn idiot really believes that he does remember. Profiting by your hint, apostrophe, pursues Jasper, I have had some day rambles with the extraordinary old fellow, and we are to make a moonlight hole and corner exploration tonight. Apostrophe, and here he is, apostrophe, says the Dean. Durdles, with his dinner bundle in his hand, is indeed beheld slouching towards them. Slouching nearer, and perceiving the Dean, he pulls off his hat, and is slouching away with it under his arm, when Mr. Sapsia stops him. Mind you take care of my friend, apostrophe, is the injunction Mr. Sapsia lays upon him. What friend O'Yorn is dead? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asks Durdles. No orders has come in for any friend O'Yorn. Apostrophe, I mean my live friend there. Apostrophe, oh. Him? Apostrophe, says Durdles. He can take care of himself, can Mr. Jasper? Apostrophe, but do you take care of him too? Apostrophe, says Sapsia. Whom Durdles, there being command in his tone, surlily surveys from head to foot. With submission to his reverence the Dean, if he'll mind what concerns you, Mr. Sapsia, Durdles he'll mind what concerns him. Apostrophe, you're out of temper, apostrophe, says Mr. Sapsia, winking to the company, to observe how smoothly he will manage him. My friend concerns me, and Mr. Jasper is my friend. And you are my friend. Apostrophe, don't you get into a bad habit of boasting, apostrophe, retorts Durdles, with a grave cautionary nod. It'll grow upon you. Apostrophe, you are out of temper, apostrophe, says Sapsia again, reddening, but again sinking to the company. I own to it, apostrophe, returns Durdles. I don't like liberties. Apostrophe, Mr. Sapsia winks a third wink to the company, as who should say. I think you will agree with me that I have settled his business, apostrophe, and stalks out of the controversy. Durdles then gives the Dean a good evening, and adding, as he puts his hat on, you'll find me at home, Mr. Jasper, as agreed, when you want me. I may go in home to clean myself. Apostrophe soon slouches out of sight. This going home to clean himself is one of the man's incomprehensible compromises with inexorable facts. He, and his hat, and his boots, and his clothes, never showing any trace of cleaning, but being uniformly in one condition of dust and grit. The lamplighter now dotting the quiet close with specks of light, and running at a great rate up and down his little ladder with that object, his little ladder under the sacred shadow, of whose inconvenience generations had grown up, and which all Cloisterham would have stood aghast at the idea of abolishing, the dean withdraws to his dinner, Mr. Tope to his tea, and Mr. Jasper to his piano. There, with no light, but that of the fire, he sits chanting choir music in a low and beautiful voice, for 2 or 3 hours, in short, until it has been for some time dark, and the moon is about to rise. Then he closes his piano softly, softly changes his coat for a pea jacket, with a goodly wicker-cased bottle in its largest pocket, and putting on a low-crowned, flap-brimmed hat, goes softly out. Why does he move so softly tonight? No outward reason is apparent for it. Can there be any sympathetic reason crouching darkly within him? Repairing to Durdle's unfinished house, or hole in the city wall, and seeing a light within it, he softly picks his course among the gravestones, monuments, and stony lumber of the yard, already touched here and there, sidewise, by the rising moon. The two journeymen have left their two great saws sticking in their blocks of stone, and two skeleton journeymen out of the dance of death might be grinning in the shadow of their sheltering sentry boxes, about to slash away at cutting out the gravestones of the next two people destined to die in Cloisterham. Likely enough, the two think little of that now, being alive, and perhaps merry. Curious, to make a guess at the two, or say one of the two. Ho! Durdles! Apostrophe, the light moves, and he appears with it at the door. He would seem to have been cleaning himself with the aid of a bottle, jug, and tumbler, for no other cleansing instruments are visible in the bare brick room with rafters overhead, and no plastered ceiling, into which he shows his visitor. Are you ready? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I am ready, Mr. Jasper. Let the old uns come out if they dare, when we go among their tombs. My spirit is ready for 'em. Apostrophe, do you mean animal spirits, or ardent? Apostrophe, apostrophe, the one's the t'other, apostrophe answers Durdles, and I mean 'em both. Apostrophe, he takes a lantern from a hook, puts a match or two in his pocket wherewith to light it, should there be need, and they go out together, dinner bundle and all. Surely an unaccountable sort of expedition. That Durdles himself, who is always prowling among old graves and ruins, like a ghoul, that he should be stealing forth to climb, and dive, and wander without an object, is nothing extraordinary. But that the choir master or anyone else should hold it worth his while to be with him, and to study moonlight effects in such company, is another affair. Surely an unaccountable sort of expedition, therefore. Where that there mound by the yard gate, Mr. Jasper? Apostrophe, I see it. What is it? Apostrophe, lime. Apostrophe, Mr. Jasper stops, and waits for him to come up, for he lags behind. What do you call quick lime? Apostrophe, apostrophe, a. Apostrophe, apostrophe, says Durdles, quick enough to eat your boots. With a little handy stirring, quick enough to eat your bones. Apostrophe, they go on, presently passing the red windows of the Traveler's Twopenny, and emerging into the clear moonlight of the Monk's Vineyard. This crossed, they come to Minor Canon Corner, of which the greater part lies in shadow until the moon shall rise higher in the sky. The sound of a closing house door strikes their ears, and two men come out. These are Mr. Crisparkle and Neville. Jasper, with a strange and sudden smile upon his face, lays the palm of his hand upon the breast of Durdles, stopping him where he stands. At that end of Minor Canon Corner the shadow is profound in the existing state of the light. At that end, too, there is a piece of old dwarf wall, breast high, the only remaining boundary of what was once a garden, but is now the thoroughfare. Jasper and Durdles would have turned this wall in another instant, but, stopping so short, stand behind it. Those two are only sauntering, apostrophe Jasper whispers. They will go out into the moonlight soon. Let us keep quiet here, or they will detain us, or want to join us, or whatnot. Apostrophe, Durdles nods assent, and falls to munching some fragments from his bundle. Jasper folds his arms upon the top of the wall, and, with his chin resting on them, watches. He takes no note, whatever of the minor cannon, but watches Neville, as though his eye were at the trigger of a loaded rifle, and he had covered him, and were going to fire. A sense of destructive power is so expressed in his face, that even Durdles pauses in his munching, and looks at him, with an unmunched something in his cheek. Meanwhile Mr. Crisparkle and Neville walk to and fro, quietly talking together. What they say cannot be heard consecutively, but Mr. Jasper has already distinguished his own name more than once. This is the first day of the week, apostrophe Mr. Crisparkle can be distinctly heard to observe, as they turn back, and the last day of the week is Christmas Eve. Apostrophe, you may be certain of me, sir. Apostrophe, the echoes were favorable at those points, but as the two approach, the sound of their talking becomes confused again. The word confidence, apostrophe shattered by the echoes, but still capable of being pieced together, is uttered by Mr. Crisparkle. As they draw still nearer, this fragment of a reply is heard. Not deserved yet, but shall be, sir. Apostrophe as they turn away again, Jasper again hears his own name, in connection with the words from Mr. Crisparkle. Remember that I said I answered for you confidently. Apostrophe then the sound of their talk becomes confused again, they halting for a little while, and some earnest action on the part of Neville succeeding. When they move once more, Mr. Crisparkle is seen to look up at the sky, and to point before him. They then slowly. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.